talking happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how you gonna have a dream come true?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Richard's Roundup. My name's John Head, and I'm Richard's sound engineer and editor. What you're about to hear is the second part of a two-part interview conducted by Richard with actor Mr. Manny Mvula. Now, Mr. Mvula is taking part in a radio play which is going to be simultaneously broadcast around the world in November. Now, this play is entitled Snared, and it covers the thorny issue of big game hunting and poaching in Africa. Take it away, Richard.
Coming back to the play, now we were obviously I've discussed it with Floyd and we talked about it briefly before we started the interview.
Yeah.
Give the listeners a flavour of what Snared is about. I mean, set up the premise of what's actually happening, and without giving too much away, explain what the play is endeavouring to do.
Okay. Yeah. The reason why we came up with Snared was more to try and raise awareness. But of course, the initial stages was to try and look at how could we engage and link the rest of the public in some kind of interesting debate. So Snared is a conservation thriller. Initially, it was a stage-based performance fused with multimedia real-life projections from Africa, where we work. My wife and I tend to go to Africa every so often. And this was actually the initial performance was in 2012 and 2013. I featured in the play as a wildlife ranger called Mangani. And then I was working with Emily Hart, who is an expert conservationist, a female. And then we were out in the field when we heard rumors that Rudy De Beers, a professional trophy hunter, had actually been snaring animals and setting snares basically for animals in order to get on with his hunting. Because in order to hunt for cats, you've got to use some kind of like bait, if you like. And so he was going into the park and doing this sort of thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to make the listeners aware again, explain what a snare is and why it's so horrific.
A snare is basically a piece of wire which is basically made in a bit of a noose. And it is set, it's such an indiscriminate way of trying to trap animals. Some people use high tension electricity cable wires that they will hang at a certain level, basically targeting an animal that they would want either to go and eat for meat or whatever, or to sell or whatever the case might be. However, because it's so set in a way that any animal can actually fall into this sort of trap and walk into a snare, so you get to see animals like lions, leopards, giraffes, elephants get trapped into them. You'd have actually set up a snare, for example, which is a wire at a height of about, waist high in order to catch an antelope. But if an elephant brushes and walks against it, a foot might get caught into it. And so this is why this is the most barbaric way, in the indiscriminate way of kind of like, trying to get anything, you want to go and eat. So the reason is that it's a silent killer. And you can't hear the noise except for an animal struggling. And it's absolutely barbaric. An animal dies in its own sort of, suffocates itself, or the foot is completely caught, and if it's an elephant, then it pulls off the snare and wanders off with it because it's so powerful, and basically the animal's foot is constricted and the blood supply is constricted, and the foot starts to rot away.
It's just unbelievable. And of course, some of the smaller animals that are caught, they just stay there and take days to die in agony, don't they?
And the trouble is that these guys that set snares will actually set as many snares as they can to widen the net, and they may not even remember where the other snares
are.
Yeah. And so, they only go to places where they think they can remember, because there's a fear factor as well in case they get caught by the wildlife rangers. And so for some animals, they will just die and there'll be less there. And of course, the hyenas and other predators will just, you know, help themselves to whatever they find. And so you know, it's just, it isn't right. I mean, you know, and the only, the main reason that fuels all this is because local communities have got no livelihoods. They're living alongside wildlife areas. And if they could only benefit from what the government promises to say, look, if we have concession areas and allow professional hunting, therefore, a certain percentage of the income generated from trophy hunting will come to you. People will then look at this and value the wildlife, thinking, we are benefiting from this resource. Let's protect it. Let's be the police. Let's be the ones that actually want to look after it and have pride in it. But people cannot have pride in something that does not benefit them, because it's only lining a pocket. You know, the money that comes out of that is only lining the pockets of the few.
That was my fault for interrupting, but I just wanted the listeners to be totally aware of how revolting snaring is. So we're talking about, coming back to, we're talking about the play.
Yeah, so the play basically creates a tension between Emily, who is the conservationist, the expert conservationist, and it's for reasons that we've kind of caught Rudy red-handed, that he has been caught in the act of snaring an elephant, or he set the snare to try and get his bait. However, that elephant was still walking around with the snare, and what he tried to do was to try and finish it off, because he knew that we were going to, myself as a ranger and Emily, the conservationist, were going to catch Rudy. And so he then uses his firearm to try and shoot it. And as soon as he picks up his rifle, we actually pounce on him. And we get him and we tie him using a snare wire, which he had as a spare snare wire. But then I had to wander off as a ranger to go and pick up the Land Rover and leave Emily on guard looking after Rudy, because we couldn't carry him. He was such a resistant. He's this kind of like Afrikaans hunter, professional hunter, who thinks that everything kind of like basically revolves around him. He actually treats all the local people appallingly, and he is in a way a racist, although he believes that he's doing good because trophy hunting is contributing to, you know, the local communities and so on and so forth. He's got his own arguments. But Emily and I don't believe, because we understand and we work with communities and we're the conservation part of it, whereas he is actually basically harvesting animals and illegally killing some of the wildlife. So I leave Emily with Rudy, and then the tension is created between Emily and Rudy, with Rudy, the hunter, basically talking himself out of the situation while I go and try and pick up the Land Rover. So the two of them are left behind there. I go away, and not knowing what has happened to me, because the Land Rover is quite a distance away, and they don't know whether I've managed to get to the Land Rover or have I, you know, got attacked by an animal or something like that, so they are not too sure. And the sun is almost getting, you know, down to the horizon. And, you know, suddenly Rudy is kind of, you know, fancying his chances now, thinking, now this is probably an opportunity. You're just a woman, a white woman in the middle of the African bush. And, you know, this is where I am, blah, blah, blah. So he's like really trying to negotiate his way out of it. And basically it creates such tension that he basically does something which is, I wouldn't want to describe, but...
Don't give too much away.
No.
Because we want people to listen to this. Go on, man.
Exactly. But anyway, so it's kind of like, you know, this is kind of like wanting to try and see what has historically been a white or a Western debate. And what we're doing is to try and engage with the local African population to see where they can come in and look at this situation between Emily and Rudy. And what do they think of that situation? and what aspects out of that discussion and argument can they contribute to that? Do they see themselves in those positions, and what do they think need to change?
Yeah.
And so it's basically a very, very tense situation where Rudy is really trying to justify his actions and Emily argues. But, you know, the end result is something that is really dire. And, you know, so it's not known what happens. We want to kind of leave it in suspense, as you so rightly say, for people to be able to kind of like make their own minds up and wonder what exactly happened, and therefore to stimulate debate, because the idea of this radio play is so that people can phone in and, you know, give us their views, and hence that will kind of just spiral and create such a huge debate across the continent.
I really hope this succeeds, because I explained to Floyd, it's something I'm very passionate about as well. And before I depart this mortal coil, I'm really want to go to Africa and see some of this marvelous wildlife. I'm just hoping that the project that you've put together with this play will make a major contribution to turning the tide on the dreadful things that are happening with animals. And I think I'm right in saying that if with a lot of these tribal communities, as you were saying earlier, if they can be shown a constructive way of making a living which incorporates supporting the wildlife, then half the battle is run. Is that correct?
That indeed is the case. That is indeed the case. That we work with several communities, and you know, we kind of like can go back regularly, my wife and I, and do some work with communities. And there is continual sort of issues with them not getting what their entitlement is. They are the custodians of the land.
Yeah.
And they deserve better. They deserve to be treated better. The trouble is there's so much corruption within some of these sort of, you know, government departments. And so it's only fair to say that, you know, with intervention from, you know, the international organizations and NGOs, there is some way that things can actually change by empowering communities. And the governments cannot just rely on NGOs coming in from outside to try and support communities. It's the government's responsibility to make sure that communities that live alongside wildlife, and indeed the same communities that the government would rely on to help them in as far as intelligence gathering is concerned, with reference to who is infiltrating and going into the national park. And because people will tend to come in, you know, they get paid far less than what you'd think, less than, I don't know, $20. You say, well, can you go and get me, you know, an elephant tusk? And, you know, somebody who doesn't have a livelihood in the community is more likely to fall for that. And therefore, you know, people think, well, this is a way to live.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why would I actually support the government when they actually label me as a poacher? What is the benefit of that? So if the government only had that sense and intelligence to think about, you know, well, let's look after these people because they're the ones that live alongside the wildlife. The more we can actually deal and work with them, the better it will be and the safer it will be for the wildlife. And generally, everyone will be a winner. But, you know, it just doesn't seem to work that way for some reason.
Well, if it weren't for people like you and Floyd and all the rest of them doing this sort of thing, we would be getting nowhere. I really hope this project and this play and what you're doing is really going to turn some corners on this. I like you, I feel passionately about it. And I just wish hopefully by doing this, I'm giving you some sort of involvement. But please keep in touch and do let us know how things progress. Obviously, nearer the time when this play is going out on the same day all over Africa. Prior to that, I'll be in touch with Floyd. And, you know, after it's occurred, I'd love to get you guys back so we can get some feedback on what the results were, what the effect it had on people that were listening to it. And I really, really wish you great success with it.
Oh, thank you very much, Richard. I'm just going to say that it's been a fantastic to be part of this, and I'll never stop. And Floyd has been such a gem, and Cheryl, my wife, who has been technical advisor on the project itself, And really, it's really aimed at trying to stimulate debate in a, on a continent-wide basis so that lots of other Africans can actually join in a debate that has been very much Western debate. And hopefully, as you say so, with your blessings, we really look forward to it growing wings. And thank you very much for giving us such a platform, Richard. We truly appreciate that.
Well, we're a little radio station in Kent, but I do hope that other radio stations will pick up on it, you know, in the UK and do a similar thing. What you're doing is absolutely fantastic. Please keep in touch, and I will be speaking to you and Floyd again.
Splendid. Thank you much. Appreciate it.
All right, Manny. Thanks for your time, and thanks for ringing. It's been absolutely fascinating. Thanks, Manny. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy talky talking, happy talk. Talk about things you like to do. You gotta have a dream if you don't have a dream.